Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partner in soccer, back to the two-man show. On the road goes Matt Doyle, not into the mountains, more to the dusty steppes of Texas, but David Goss is here. And happy birthday, not to you, Dave, but to Duncan McGuire, whose yo-yo continues.
Stop.
Will he, won't he? It's his birthday, his 23rd birthday. Meanwhile, he's waiting for word on the appeal to make him a Blackburn player because apparently the paperwork was screwed up. New York City also cooking in the transfer window. Austin got a number 9 with MLS bona fides, and the Galaxy are reportedly back in for Ramon Sosa. All that and more in our transfer window segment. Plus, we're going to pump prime for CONCACAF Champions Cup, previewing the final four teams outside Inter Miami who have a bye, deep dives on Vancouver, Cincinnati, Houston, and Philly, and we'll try to figure out if an MLS team can make the semifinals, let alone make a final and knock off the Liga MX Gigantes. 16 days until Miami RSL, 19 days until match day one, TBD number of days until Lionel Messi plays in a preseason game again. David Goss, what's up, man?
Is it defeatist of us to ask if an MLS team can make the semifinal when we've had a finalist the last two seasons?
And for the last 6 years?
Yeah.
I don't know. You think so? Am I coming at this with the wrong
That's very
lenses?
CCL of you, and it this is CCC. It's
free space,
it's CONCACAF 4.0.
Is this a blank slate? Do you feel we can leave the trauma of the past behind, or will that always be somewhere in our stomach ready to bubble up?
Not even a little bit. In having the conversation pre-show, we were talking about, you know, as we get into who has the best road, who has the best opportunity, and Maria was mentioning how bad Pachuca have been this year and Toluca are up and down. So Philadelphia do. And it's like, no, Philly's going to lose 4-0 at Toluca, at Pachuca, if they survive Saprissa. Because we do this whole thing, right? Right before it starts, we're like, this team's through, this team's through, this team's through. And then that first game, it's like, oh, it turns out Atletico Pantoja came to play and is going to smack a Western Conference finalist in the first round.
Independiente from Panama, La Chorrera, is in this competition. If you remember, one of the last times we saw them, it was them knocking off Toronto FC a year after Toronto went to the final. Anything can happen. We know this. We'll give you the full preview. Vancouver is the only MLS team in action this week. It's a little bit of a strange scheduling setup. There's 5 or 6 games this week, midweek, of course, and then we wait a few weeks right around the start of the MLS season for the rest of the teams to enter the competition. If you're trying to plot out the preseason here, it's almost over. So we're doing our CONCACAF Champions Cup preview today. We'll have the first match reactions, of course, on Thursday. Plus, we're going to preview the Galaxy, Charlotte, Minnesota, NYCFC, Colorado, Dallas, and DC. Monday, the 12th of February, it's just previews because we got to get through 29 teams. Red Bull, Seattle, Montreal, Austin, LAFC, Chicago, Portland, Atlanta, San Jose, Toronto, Sporting Kansas City. I mean, I can barely say that, Dave, so get prepared for that day. We're going to have to deep dive a whole lot of stuff. But we'll get a reward after that on the Thursday, the award show plus the Golden Boot draft. Then on President's Day, right before the kickoff of the 2024 season, we'll preview Miami and RSL, do our trophy draft, and speak with some high-profile folks from around the MLS season pass world. And then it's off and running. The season starts, and there we go. But it's still preseason, so what's the best thing you saw since the last time we got together?
I think it's pretty obvious. The greatest city in the history of the world being announced as the
East
World Cup
Rutherford,
host.
New Jersey, stand up. Let's go. Greatest in the history. You're a directional Rutherford, and you're at that level.
Yeah, that's living the dream. So as someone who grew up taking the bus from Port Authority to Old Giant Stadium to watch Red Bull games and non-FIFA Ireland Ecuador friendlies and everything else in between and tailgating around U.S. 5-0 losses in Gold Cup finals and all the other things that have followed that. It's pretty special to have
joyful
that announced.
Moments.
And it's one of those things where you're like hearing all the rumors of like Jerry Jones is doing this whole push in Dallas and L.A.'s in, L.A.'s out. What are they doing? And then it's like, in the end, the only thing that matters is New York. You can do all you want. Jerry Jones.
Where do you really want to be? Where do you really want to be? Yeah. Where is the soul of this country?
Jerry Jones can sell me on the nicest parking lot on the planet. He can build the best suites in the middle of nowhere, but he still can't be in New York. And that's what you get when you pick this game. So it's pretty epic. I'm enjoying all of my Jersey friends, like straining against the pain of it being called New York, which is also class.
That's me. That's like, me waving. I'm technically a Jersey friend now.
Yeah. No, congratulations on the number one thing about you being your proximity to a different place.
Yeah, I've experienced that. I am experiencing that. We'll see if I can stick it out here in the wilds of New Jersey for that long. But of course, if you didn't see it, all the host sites are out. The games they're getting from group stage games all the way through the final should be a crazy World Cup split between three also, countries. And I mean, you know, the final played in the pretzel of freeways. So it should be tight.
No, it's the dream. You can ski next door inside at a failed mall, and then
it's not come failed. Over. It's not failed, Dave. No, not you at come all. Out to Jersey, you come with me, you hit the slopes. We'll do the slopes, we'll do the indoor water park right afterwards. We'll go to, you know, Binnigan's or whatever it is that we're gonna hit for lunch. It is you know,
it's no, we gotta go to my off. Diner. When my uncle indoors. Used to take me to Jets games back in the day, we'd go to the same diner before every game, and it was the best. But it's epic that it's starting at the Azteca. Like, I think that's pretty special, pretty cool. Obviously, Mexico will play in that game, but I threw it as a but. I think the Azteca for a lot of us is like one of the cultural homes of the game. So it starts there. Then you get the U.S. playing what out in Seattle to open things up, which is like for a lot of us, one of the best soccer markets we've been. We went to the CCL final 2 years ago and know how special it is. Feel really good for a lot of people there. And then you've got Toronto expanding the stadium. You've got them hosting Canada. You've got Canada playing in both Vancouver and Toronto. Like, I don't know. It felt a lot of real stuff yesterday of like, these are the things that we hope for the game and for people who have helped build it in all these areas. And seeing like the Grammys ended and the local news pops up with like New York, New Jersey is hosting the biggest sporting event in the history, like in the world. And you're like, oh, cool. Everyone else knows.
Yeah, you and all the boomers are just locked right in. True. Into the Grammys, right into local news.
It was a quick transition from I have to stay through the whole Billy Joel song, of course.
Yeah. Oh, I'm just still sort of, speaking of trauma, like imagining your Port Authority to giant stadium trips and crying/delighted for all the people that will experience Port Authority bus service during the World Cup, as well as New Jersey Transit's ability to
now. There wasn't a train back then. Now
to be reliable at any given moment. All right. Best thing I saw. It's not the best thing. It's just the craziest thing. I mean, Duncan Maguire at the mercy of Blackburn bureaucrats. Say that time five times fast. What happened here?
Bureaucrats is actually a League One team. They're pushing for promotion.
Got it. Another team that starts with B.
Another B.
It would be an absolute pleasure to have them in the championship. So other signings were available, but Duncan Maguire reportedly had to watch from the owner's box in Blackburn's last game, the game immediately after transfer deadline day. Maguire was announced as a signing. They did like a little video. I don't know if you saw this of, you know, these big dunks. So they went out and they bought themselves a child's play toy that you put on the door, the basketball set, and had Duncan Maguire dunk it. Now, checked that box, didn't check the box where you turn in the right paperwork, and it's possible he'll have to go back to Orlando. And I feel so bad for Duncan Maguire. Like, I don't know that I would describe Blackburn as a quote-unquote dream move, but
no, but he's going to go like, to England with no move.
He's going
to
make a ton more money. He's going to go play in the championship. Even if it doesn't work out on this loan deal to Blackburn, he has every opportunity to go start a different chapter of his career. And did I say make a lot more money? And it's all sort of slipping away potentially because of a check mark or a date or a submit button or a 404 error or I don't know what.
So I believe Tom's the one who wrote this up in The Athletic. If it's not him, sorry to whoever else, but I don't care. This happened in Blackburn last year and it was Lewis O'Brien.
No.
They didn't insert the paperwork correctly for Lewis O'Brien. He was unavailable. It was too late for him to join a new team. I think that's how he ended up at DC United.
Yeah.
So we should have seen it coming, I guess.
Oh my gosh. You just feel for Duncan Maguire and it seems like there's a possibility he'll be back in Orlando. So I guess we'll see when they play Cavalier, I believe it is, to start CONCACAF champion. Cavalry for them. Too many Caval teams in this year's edition of the
thing. It's not a Haitian team. It's a Canadian team.
Cincinnati's got Cavalier. Yeah. All right. Let's jump into the transfer roundup before we get to the previews. This one's sponsored by the first three quarters of Knicks basketball when LeBron and the Lakers are at the Garden.
Yikes, dude. Come on.
That was tough.
They doubled Tyrese Haliburton out of the game at the IST, and it can't happen to Jalen Brunson. We're missing three of our five starters. What are you talking about?
It was tough.
Nine-game win streak?
You and Tom are sucking me into the Knicks, you know, vortex here.
Knicks
and that was
back.
They are back. They are back. Now, Diego Rubio's back in MLS.
That's
it. We didn't know where he'd end up. There were some rumors about South America, of course, but eventually Austin FC picks up the Chilean international, who we've seen in Kansas City and most recently in Colorado. How's he fit into Austin, in your opinion?
Incredible. And we've talked about him a couple times as the season came to a close, because I started doing the, like, Diego Rubio fits on pretty much all of these teams. He fit on, I thought, Cincy as a Vasquez replacement. I think he fits on Houston, who we're going to talk about in a little, because he's such a versatile player. So he can be the guy who leads your line. He can stay a little bit higher. He'll score goals and finish. He's not, I would say, lethal in every way and the cleanest finisher, but he's creative in his finishing. He can finish with both feet. He can finish from outside the box, from around the six as well, but he also can drop in and play make. And that's where it's fun now with Austin, because Driussi has shown he's an elite finisher, and his MVP campaign was fueled by goals he was scoring and guys helping set him up. So I think Rubio can fit in both those ways. If for some reason Driussi's out, you could play two up top, in theory, and he can play off of a second forward, like it feels like right now, Giassi Zardes. Although maybe there's still a lot more to happen for Austin off the back of Boreal, who we talked about last show, sort of struggling to get his feet under him and maybe get a lot of moves. That's where this makes sense. You can almost guarantee Rubio's production if he's healthy, which is the question mark. But you have a guy here who's reliable. It's probably not a long-term contract. I haven't seen the details yet. And so this is sort of a stopgap that can keep you competitive while you're trying to work on other players, but he's versatile. So if you end up selling Rigoni, bringing in a specific player, Rubio can probably fit with all of those guys because of the way he plays.
It's a one-year deal with an option for 25.
Boom. Yeah, that's the dream. Yeah, so you probably overpay him year one or for 1 year, because that's what you need, and it works for him as well to sort of figure out where does he want to be long-term.
Yeah, Rubio dropping in. Obreon is more of a line stretcher, more of an in-behind guy. Rigoni is not that, but you start to have balance there where it's Obreon and Driussi who can get forward a little bit more, have more opportunities in the 18, and now you have a little bit of creative presence that they didn't have before with Giassi Zardes in there. I mean, for a, okay, one-year deal with an option, Diego Rubio is a nice one to land on. The question is, can he find that 2022 form? 16 goals, 7 assists that year, was one of the best players in the league, and then injuries sort of robbed Colorado of that experience last year. But a big signing for Austin. Up top, some big signings reportedly for NYCFC. One is official, Agustin Ojeda from Racing Club. It's a U22 deal, reportedly in the $5.5 million range, with some big bonuses that he could hit to take it up to $7.5 or more.
CFC. Anytime NYC New York signs a U22, it's always 18 times more expensive than every DP on half the other rosters.
Yes, correct. CFG, that scouting network, a little early snatch there, it seems like, for them. Ojeda is really just now breaking through with Racing this year, but he's been pretty good. Smaller guy, but more of a, like, vertical profile direct player than, say, a Tyus Magno is. But now you're looking at that roster, it does look like they're reloading in a way to move on from Magno, potentially. They're also got a number 9 in the books here. This would potentially, according to Tom Bogert, the deal would be worth $8.6 million with $2 million in add-ons. This is for a young center forward out of Red Star Belgrade. He's 18. He's got 8 goals in his last 600 minutes. And, couple young players for ho-hum, a combined total reportedly of $14 million for NYC, Dave.
They've spent well when they've done that before. The issue last year, the issues in the past have not been the player ID. It hasn't been the investment. It's just been the timing. They've done it so late, so often, that the players either aren't there for large stretches of the season. So now, like last year, you're chasing a playoff spot from behind late on where you can't make any mistakes, or the roster's too thin. So when you look at these acquisitions and it's like, will everyone fit? What does this team need? They just needed more players. They just needed more talent overall. And I think when you look at the guys like Asante Rodriguez and all these other pieces, when they've had options around them, they've played well. I understand Maxi Morales won't be one of them, but I don't think it just falls on like Maxi as a player. It's that in 2021, they were a deep, good, competent team, and it made the young players better. It allowed the Talos Magnos of the world and Tatis to play well, I think, when they were on the field. And then last year, it all fell on some of these guys, and it was too much pressure. So you add this on top of Bakar and the other pieces that they already made last summer to get ready for this year, and they're 10 steps ahead right now than they were 12 months ago.
Feels like the front three, they are minimum two deep with potential quality. You're relying on young players. I understand that at all three positions, and that's not including Tyus Magno. And then the hallmark of this team was, you know, to your point, was the spine for years and years and years, was the platform off which the young players that they scout and sign through their network have an opportunity to thrive, because it's not all on them. So now it's Parks, it's Sands, it's Tiago, it's Risa, who I thought was very good last year. They signed a Serbian right back / center back as depth. I won't even attempt to say his name. Thank you, but no thank you to New York City FC for not including pronunciation in that press release. But outside of maybe left back, I don't really see a hole on this roster that needs addressing.
Do you trust Freeze?
I mean, that's the other spot, right? It's not the same level of, you know, Sean John in the playoffs, for instance. Sean John through repeated series and repeated seasons. It's not the same yet. But that's an opportunity that Freeze has to earn and keep, I guess, this year. And I take it all back at left back. Kevin O'Toole till I die. Well done to the scouting department at New York City FC. We'll see what happens with some of these players. Also an exclusive from CL Merlo, who is the Tom Bogert of South America. Galaxy back in for Ramon Sosa, this time in the region of $12.5 million. Trying to get that deal done. The Pansa one is not done either. Dave, do you think the Galaxy get a DP in before the season starts?
No, and I also, I'm not sure if this is the right move. Doesn't it need to be center forward?
They've said that Dejan Jovetic, they trust him.
Seems like... If you were saying to me, okay, you have one position that you can upgrade in this way with an experienced player, I would take what I think I'm going to get from Diego Fagundes as a bit of a given across from a young DP alongside Ricky Pooj, and I would make that acquisition at center forward. Now, I know Greg Vanney loves wingers, and it's the best thing that's ever happened, and it seems like the Galaxy are pretty intent on it, but that's the part where it's a little confusing to me. The reason I say no is because we've seen now the proof of like the LA Galaxy come in and every number just goes up, even with the way they've shifted and the way things have changed. So they get priced out a lot, and it feels like with their back against the wall going into the season, people are more aggressive. And a lot of times now the move happens in the summer because it takes a long time to sort of work the number back down to what's considered reasonable. And because they've brought in Peck now, it feels like they have a little bit more wiggle room to stand their ground. They're not as desperate.
We'll see. Big season expected for the Galaxy. Big season expected for all the teams in CONCACAF Champions Cup. Let's get into it. Season previews. We're starting with the Vancouver Whitecaps. 48 points last year. That's a 5-point improvement. 6th in the West, 13th in the Shield. They lost to LAFC in round one. Kind of a shellacking by LAFC, who are a little bit of the bugaboo for this team in knockout competitions. CONCACAF Champions League RIP included. Here's your haiku. Time to level up. Goodbye, mediocrity, playoff win or bust. This is a team, for me, that has sort of been the definition of mediocre for their entire time in Major League Soccer. You go look through year by year, they're always sort of middle back of the pack. Maybe they're in the playoffs, maybe not. If they get to the playoffs, they're not making a run. Sort of the bright spot for them has been the last 2 years in the Canadian Cup, and I won't denigrate that at all. Two wins for Vanni Sartini in that competition. Crucial. That's how you get into CONCACAF Champions Cup if you're the Whitecaps. It's how you sort of establish a winning culture that hasn't been there before, but it has been mediocre. But there was a little something at the end of last year that convinced us perhaps otherwise. Key transfers in as they try to build on that. Demir Krylock's a free agent, so is Fafa Pico. Bjorn Ing Utvik signed from Sarpsborg, so another center back into that group. And then out, Richie Larea, Simon Becher, Kyle Alexandre, just in case you remember that name, he is out now officially for the Vancouver Whitecaps. Tell me what Vanni Sartini's working with here, Dave. And what he's not working with are 6 games on the bench in Major League Soccer to start. Because if you remember, he is suspended for his outburst and inappropriate comments in the press conference following the playoff loss.
He's working with one of the hottest teams post Leagues Cup last season, and he's working with a team that found a clear identity both in how they play and who they are. It's solidified around the designated players they acquired over the last 3 years, which they've now re-upped Ryan Gauld. So it feels like, for Vancouver, one of the things you talk about mediocrity is every time they've had some success, they've sort of leaned in a different direction very quickly after, and then maybe they come back. So 3 years ago, they made the playoff run. Then they tried to start the next year by changing the way they played. They weren't able to find their feet. Then they come back into last year, and they shift as the season goes along. But in re-upping Ryan Gauld and the acquisitions they made in the way they went out and got Sam Adekube and at the time Richie Larea last summer to sort of solidify even more what they did, because those two players, I think a lot of the reason they came in was because of their success in the 3-5-2 for the Canadian men's national team, which is how it feels like now Vanni Sartini and this group are going to play going forward. That kind of, to me, was the flag and the sign that they're very committed to that. So what we've seen is they really like versatile, athletic, wide center backs who can cover ground in space. They like wing backs that are almost purely attacking players. In the past, it's been Julian Gressel, Luis Martins, Richie Larea, Ryan Raposo. Most of the guys I just named aren't considered defenders on most clubs. So that's where they are able to take some risk, because Andres Kubas, an elite number six who helps cover for them, they've had some question marks in the talent around him and who can be difference makers. And then Brian White and Ryan Gauld up top, which at this point are a given. On XG, second best attack in the Western Conference last year. Brian White has scored goals now, double digits for multiple years. Got a call up for Camp Cupcake this January. Ryan Gauld was an MVP candidate last year. So it's not a question mark anymore in the attack. They're either able to hit you in transition with Gauld going into the channels over the top and then finding White or a second runner, or they're able to get to the end line and then cutbacks and crosses to a guy in Brian White, who's one of the best aerial finishers and dual winners in the air in the box in Major League Soccer. And if not, you know, it falls around and then you see Gauld able to pick up those scraps or some of the other guys getting involved. So there's a lot of knowns on this team at this point in the season, before it even started, and we don't have full rosters. I tend to have a lot of confidence in teams that are knowns. And I think Vancouver does too. They set records with their attendance for the playoffs last year. It was the first time they opened the upper deck. I think they've already announced it for multiple regular season games this year that they'll do the same. It feels like everyone around this, everyone involved, is positive about the direction they're going. The question is, what's the ceiling at the end of that? And that we don't have a clear answer for.
Ceiling comes with stars, generally in Major League Soccer. Ryan Gauld, you'd say, is the star, with sort of Brian White as his 1A. Is this a Batman and Robin situation, or are they on more equal terms?
Because Batman and Robin are unequal.
Batman's not the power. Robin's, oh, come on. Robin's not Batman. Batman would never tolerate someone calling him Robin.
So then I would say it's a Batman and Robin situation. I think Brian White's been great for them. He's in the right spot. They found the right player, but Gauld on and off the ball is elite in Major League Soccer, and he's been the straw that stirs the drink for them, where they got by for moments with a Simon Betcher. They might be able to this year with Timur Krok. There are other pieces there, not to knock Brian White, but I think Gauld is the clear number one.
Consistency, not from Gauld and White, but I think the pieces around them is the real difference. Man, it's just, even with the system that Vanni Sartini rightfully settled on, this is a team that lost momentum at the end of the regular season, that lost momentum into the playoffs when they had another club say, fine, come create, come score against us. You don't get to be the transition team. You don't get to be the team running behind into space.
But that wasn't the problem. The problem was set-piece defending. With all of that said, if they don't give up 15 goals against LAFC in that series off set-pieces, what is LAFC doing?
But that's the lack of consistency, right? If it's not one thing, it always seems to be another thing with Vancouver.
Yeah, last year was pretty much that one thing.
It was that one thing.
But you're right. The year before was goalkeeping. Without Maxime Crépeau, Hassal wasn't at that level. And again, they couldn't play close games like you'd think in the playoffs because they couldn't trust him. And last year was set-piece defending, which there is not going to be a massive personnel change in this team. So I don't know how it gets much better without that. I don't know if it's scheme. I don't know if it's responsibility from the individuals, but there has to be. It was the biggest Achilles heel in MLS last year.
How about a player to watch outside of the obvious of Ryan Gauld and Brian White and maybe even Andres Kubas? Is there something else on this team that intrigues you?
Pedro Vite. He's the reason, or he's sort of the example of what a U22 signing should be. Right, they were able to spend DP money on reliable guys like Kubas and Gauld who can carry them. Kubas, top five D mid in the league. You know what you're going to get from him. For Vite, there's a pretty big range on who he can be. If he hits the top of that, this team can be elite because they have a different way to attack. They're still an elite attack, but he has the ability to unlock a defense when they're closed in. He has the ability to beat guys 1v1 on the dribble or have that pass that's able to unlock a defense that's sitting back like an LAFC and take them to another level. So he's the one where there's big expectations on. And he's the one that sort of controls a lot of the, are they going to be similar to like you talked about in the past in that medium area?
I'm just a little concerned about right back. Richie was such a critical piece for them last year of chance creation, whether it was via combination play on that right side or just sort of his own incredible knack at pushing the ball at defenders and forcing them into mistakes or bad decisions. Richie's gone. It was an incredible investment in that position. Anders also says we've passed our limit on the Vancouver Whitecaps at this very moment. So, yeah I'm
anytime
concerned about
Anders right back. Gives us a time warning, that's when you open up a whole can of worms that we didn't discuss going to, which I don't mind. So on the Richie thing, let me just throw out there, I agree with you. And Richie's a game-changing player. They have gotten production from that position when it's not him for a really long time.
So it's Javane Brown, for instance.
It's Javane Brown.
Could it be Fafa Pico?
It could be Fafa Pico, which not that far off from the role he was playing for Nashville, which is obviously a different setup in their 4-4-2 diamond, but working hard, playing on the wide side of that, the wide side of the diamond, giving a ton of pressure on that high side, pressing early. Like, it's not that far off as a role for him. So it could be him. It could be a lot of guys. It's also a position I think that's fillable. Like, you're asking for attacking players who you don't require to defend a lot. You can go out and find those, even if it's late in this window as a trade, even if it's in the summer.
Over under, will they win a playoff series?
Yes, they will.
Okay. Three seasons under Vanny. They've never made it past round one. I believe in their history, we're looking at two quarterfinals in MLS, and that's it. Just quarterfinals. No semifinals to speak of, though they did hit a semi in 16-17 in CCL. I'm going to say no. I'm going to say no playoff series win for this Vancouver team, and that is the next level. What is the This Is Vine meme? Why wouldn't that happen? Probably it's reliance on Gauld and White and Kubas to a certain extent. Kubas's injury at the end of last year, to talk about that sort of vacillating form, that was a big part of it. But they didn't have one of their best players, their trendsetter, the guy who's, you know, the dominoes fall when he's not there. When he's there, he props them up. So like any MLS team, if your DPs get hurt, you might be FUBAR. And then I think it's the right back position and the fullbacks overall. Where does Adekube play? Is he a center back? Is he a left back? Is he able to play? Because right now in preseason, he's hurt. We'll see. We'll see. What's your prediction? You said playoff win. So where do you have him finishing in the West?
I'm going to say third or fourth in the West.
Third or fourth? Wow. Yeah.
Win a home playoff game. I think CONCACAF throws it off a bit, but I think they're a team that will be consistent over the course of the season. Also, they've added a whole new region because officially today they've renamed to Vancouver Island FC because they're Whitecaps FC. They'll be playing the CONCACAF match, I think, at Pacific Stadium. So they're just growing. They didn't have to do anything, and now they're double the size.
It's like Risk. We're just, you know, we're sending out emissaries to take over new territory. I'm not that high on them, three or four. I'm more in the same spot as last year. That 5-7 range, I think, is about right for them. But a playoff team, in my opinion. All right, Cincinnati, 69 points in Supporters Shield last year. Nice, plus 20 points year over year. First in the East, of course, Shield winners. Lost to the Crew in the Eastern Conference Final. That was a tough one. Here is your haiku. First trophy acquired. Alas, the playoffs were hell. Now, go win a cup. Not the cup, a cup. It doesn't matter what one it is. U.S. Open Cup, almost there last year. CONCACAF Champions Cup, got that opportunity. Now, Leagues Cup would be cool. MLS Cup would be the dream. Go win a cup. They've got the talent. They've got the coaching. They've got the organizational structure in place. When you have all those things, and you don't win anything, and I, look, the Shield is something. Don't get me wrong. It's a big something, but you don't win a cup, that's an opportunity lost. Key transfers in. No,
that was a good one, by the way.
You like that one?
The Hell edition, because they lost to Columbus, and Hell is real, and the playoffs was very good. So, yeah. No, that was one of your better ones.
All right. You know, I was just skipping over the feedback part.
Because
we've
deleted that.
Yeah, I don't even want a piece of that anymore. I'm going to keep my expectations really low. Key transfers in. Miles Robinson, a free agent. Corey Baird, a free agent as well. Yuya Kubo re-signed. The man loves Skyline Chili. Kip Keller arrived. And then Pavel Buscha from the Czech Republic is not yet announced, but basically was sort of announced by the media in Cincinnati as well as Tom as being done. So we're sort of expecting that to be the case, and we'll operate in this preview as if it is. And then here's the big news of late. Again, CL Merlo. Luca Oriano is the new reinforcement of Cincinnati from Vasco da Gama. $3 million is the price. They're saying Boca and Velez were both in for him reportedly, but Oriano did not want to go back to Argentina. He's currently in Brazil. We'll try to sort through maybe where he plays in a second, or let's just do it now. The Flying Lion says, where do you guys think Luca Oriano is going to play in this team? What's your predicted formation for the year? And that'll take us into Coach's Spotlight. What do you think? Winger, so, who's left-footed, but a right winger.
Yeah, well, from what I've watched, he's a right winger who's always coming inside. So it gives you two options. You could play him on the left and have him give you width and get to the end line, which maybe is a buffer for if Barrial leaves in the summer, because Alvaro Barrial was top 8 in chance creation last year from the left wing back position, was a big part of why this team was successful. The rumors were that he wanted to go to Europe. Fiorentina was the one connected with him. Didn't happen in this window. That doesn't mean it won't happen. So you kind of have to protect yourself against that a little bit. You've also lost Santiago Arias, who was a flyer pickup last year as a free agent, but Colombian World Cup starter at the right wing back position. So you have an opening there as well, which Oriano could step into immediately, or you could shift how you play a little bit. You could call it more of a 4-3-3 and have him play in a front three with probably Boupenza and maybe Corey Baird on the other wing, or Yuya Kubo or some of the other options that they have. So it feels like one of those moves where there's a clear need at right wing back that he could fill. There's options as you go forward. Maybe if he plays on the right side and he's successful and you lose Barrial in the summer, you just shift the way the team plays and everything goes down the right wing, similar to what we saw at times when a Gattis or an Alvis Powell started when Arias was out, and everything goes through Barrial and he is quote unquote a wing back, but for all intents and purposes, he's a second forward.
I think there's an ability to play in similar ways in different formations with this addition, whether he's a right wing back, whether he's a right winger, whether Barrial is there or not. Ultimately, we know that Corey Baird is not going to be a ball dominant player. He's more of a movement guy and a final touch player who can combine. Boupenza wants the ball, so I don't see him playing like a traditional nine. He is not going to be Brandon Vasquez. He wants to drop in. He wants to combine with Lucho. So I can see a 4-3-3 world where on one side, if Barrial goes, you have a very, hold it down, left back, good in possession, but not going to go all the way down the inline. And then maybe at right back or right wing, you let Oriano do his thing. It's going to be a transition year just because of the interest in Barrial, because they have so many players who played big-time roles leaving, among them Brandon Vasquez, Yerson Mosquera, Junior Moreno, even Santi Arias in that same vein. Four starters, and then big-time depth in Don Baggi and Ray Gattis.
Yeah, they will probably start their majority of their games early on. I don't want to be too specific because, like, Nick Haglund's hurt. It sounds like they're going to bring in, I don't know if you mentioned Buca yet.
Yeah.
The sentiment. Yeah. It hasn't gotten done yet, so he won't be there. But in the way it'll look, they will have at least four starters that have changed from last year, and it's not because of injury things. And that's a lot. They are not the linchpin starters. You still have Celentano. You still have Miazga. You still have Nwobodo. You still have Lucho. Those are your spine. So it is pieces that are important, but not the core of the team. But it's a lot of turnover for a team that didn't have a ton of injuries last year, that was able to really run out a similar group time and time again, and then blew everyone off the field and ran away with the supporter shield. And those are big question marks. But I think if they can get this signing done in midfield, if they can get Oriano in, it feels like overall talent is higher. As good as Mosquera was last year, Miles Robinson's in his prime. He's a known quantity. You talked about it a little bit when we were talking before. if Miazga's out, Miles Robinson can run a back line. He can communicate. He can manage that. He's won MLS Cups. He starts for the national team. Mosquera's just 6 years younger, had never done anything like that. So you didn't have that guy there that could fill in. So it feels like there's more there for this team, but there's also more question marks than I maybe expected coming out of last year.
I think question marks for Champions Cup as well. Barrial has been away, not been with the team. Bush is not with the team as well. Obviously, not bringing back Junior Moreno. Bupenza has been going through whatever it is that Aaron Bupenza has been going through from a legal perspective back in Gabon. And Corey Baird's a new piece. I wonder how quickly this team can hit the ground running. Let's just throw out, let's say the Orellana deal gets done. I'm just going to throw out this formation. Barrial at left wing back, Robinson, Miazga, Murphy. Right wing back, let's just say it's Orellana, maybe it'd be Alves Powell, TBD. Wobodo, Boucher, Lucho, then Baird and Bupenza up top. Is that a team that can go out and win Champions Cup?
Yes, but I don't think that will be the team playing throughout most of that competition, so I would be surprised if they did.
Lucho Costa, our star spotlight, reigning MVP. Can he do it again, or was that the high point?
No, I don't think it was, because what he has shown since he returned to Major League Soccer is consistency. Every single game, he's a chance creator. Every single game, he's locked in. And that was the question marks when he was with DC United and left. Was that Rooney had brought the best out of him, but that he didn't show up every single game. He's completely different in that way. So he's a given to me. Like, you can trust he will give you, maybe it's not the exact numbers, because sometimes it hits the post, sometimes it doesn't, chances here or there. But when you look at last season, these few moments where, like, he took a game, he got a game of rest, he came off the bench, he won them the game off the bench. There were games where we don't know what's happening with Brenner. Now we don't know what's happening with Vasquez. We don't know who's healthy, who's available. They were still able to win games because of him. And so it feels like, to me, Lucho Acosta now is a given. And whether he wins MVP or not, he's going to be in that Carlos Gil, Dennis Bouanga, Cucho Hernandez conversation where they're always going to be the best player on the field.
That's the conversation Aaron Bupenza would like to be in, both personally and organizationally. The amount of outlay on Bupenza was significant and was a big replacement in a transition moment with Brenner leaving, as you said, and now Brandon Vasquez leaving. He's the most interesting player on this team to watch outside of Lucho by far. I'm very curious to see how he does with maybe a little bit more space within the team. Not just traditionally space around him, space to operate, but space to sort of occupy a position of being like, yeah, Lucho's the man, but like, I'm man 1B. I'm like, I'm right there. I have a big position in this team, a huge influence. When I ask for the ball, I'd like to get the ball. I'm going to be a volume shooter. Like, I want to see Aaron Bupenza take on a bigger role, demand a bigger role, but in the same vein, find a way to work with Lucho, because the best moments we saw from Bupenza last year is when he's in that little left-hand channel with Lucho. They're combining, running off each other, and all of a sudden, their gravity confuses defenses and their skill leads to goals. I want to see that from Aaron Bupenza, but he feels like one of these players, Dave, where the ceiling and the floor are like, I mean, we're talking about a lot of headspace here.
Yeah.
Like, there are a lot of variables, and it could be amazing or it could go not so well.
Yeah, he showed up late for Gabon, for coming back from Gabon to FC Cincinnati, and then a month later showed up late going to Gabon. So there was no consistency in what was going on.
And I can identify, look, flights these days, terrible, the delays, you know, logistics, right? Logistics.
Yeah, but the talent is clearly there. It's why we created the Goss Theorem, because it takes a little time for talented players like that coming across the world to find their feet and maybe for teams to adjust to them. But I think Cucho is like a really good comp of like, could be a lethal number nine, can also drop in and be an elite chance creator. Doesn't look the way it looks like with Lucho, because he's stocky and a little bit different of a build, but it could be really good. The one thing that stands out to me when you talk about the attack, though, is sometimes when we talk about MLS teams, you talk about cohesive units, you talk about how it all fits. But when you break it down into an Excel spreadsheet and you say a good MLS team needs 22% production from a DP, it needs 11% production from a young DP. What you are getting from Brandon Vasquez on a non-DP, non-TAM contract was elite. So even if Corey Baird is as good as Corey Baird was last year, or even if Bupenza is as good as he can be in his spot, have you lost a lot of production?
Yeah, it's a huge question. I think the next question would be, what do you do with the outlay from Brandon Vasquez?
Mm-hmm.
That's what helps determine your future as a club, because yes, you can't replace that cap hit slash production. It's, you know, that's a unicorn to get what you got from Brandon Vasquez, a best 11 season, a golden boot esque season from that position. But if you can go spend $3 million on Oriano and he upgrades your team in a different way that Vasquez couldn't, if Bupinza now has more space to operate because there isn't that guy who's going to be the box player all the time making the near post run, I mean, maybe that's where opportunity lies for this team. Over under 12 and a half goals for Aaron Bupinza.
I'm going to go over. All comps?
No, MLS.
I'll still go over.
Okay, I'll take that too. Maybe it wasn't a good line then. How about this? Over under Champions Cup semifinals and 0.5 cups, non-shield trophies.
Those are two different things, or they're being connected?
There's well, a they can't. They are connected. To win Champions Cup, you got to get to the semifinals, and right, they want to win a cup. I think that's pretty clear. A cup would be the goal for 2024.
For a semifinal. So saying we think they'd have to get
through Monterrey. Start with Champions Cup. You think they can make it through? Think they can get there?
They'd have to make it probably through Monterrey and then potentially Inter Miami or Nashville. It feels like a step too far early in the season for them.
Okay,
I think they're going to peak as it goes along. I'll take the 0.5. I'll take the 0.5 cups. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Making another step forward. So what's the this is fine meme? What's the flip side of that? You're saying I'll take a cup for them. It wouldn't happen because
four changes is a ton, and lack of cohesion for a team that was sort of felt like at times built a little bit. They were overperforming the sum of their parts at times last year. And so now Barrial wants out. He doesn't perform at the same level. You've lost cohesion across a couple of these other positions. The new guys don't fit in as quickly as you'd like. And now it's Lucho Acosta trying to carry things, and it's just a step too far for him. And I think even in that scenario, we're talking like a 5 or 6 seed. We're not talking out of the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree with that. For me right now on predictions, why it could be their year, we've already taken you through that. It's talent, it's cohesion, it's coaching, it's depth, it's all the things. It's a top 3 team in the East for sure for me. It's a shield contender again, if that's what they want to do, and a team that is among the top 3 or 4 teams in the entire league when you talk about who are going to win things are capable of doing it. And if we can get to Cincinnati, I have a Skyline Chili gift card.
Nice.
Sitting around here. That's for Doyle, but we'll use it in his stead. All right, Houston Dynamo, 51 points, plus 15 points year over year, fourth in the West, ninth in the Shield. Lost to Kansas City in the Western Conference semifinal. The haiku is as this. What the heck was I just saying there? That was bad delivery. This is the haiku. Cherish the good times. Trophies are not guaranteed. In Hector, we trust. The issue is you got to trust an aging body, and we're seeing right now the peril of that. Ace in Europe recovering, trying to get ready for the 2024 season. In the meantime, Griffin Dorsey has been re-signed. Steven Anor Giamfi and Osman Silla were both taken in the super draft, both big-time players. Giamfi dropped as a generation Adidas, and Silla was one of the best attackers in the entire college game, but it seems like he was going to go to Europe. I most recently saw him in Dynamo camp, so maybe they're going to hold on to him. Would be good because they have a big injury in Nelson Quiñones. Kieran Sargent was signed. He's a homegrown from Georgetown. And Albert Elise was rumored, but just a rumor, according to Ben Olsen. Out, Corey Baird, Thorio Farson, Teenage Hedebi, Ivan Franco, and Chase Gasper. What's the coach's spotlight, Dave, and how did this transfer window affect what Ben Olsen is capable of putting out there?
The coaching spotlight is this was the possession team in Major League Soccer last year alongside the Columbus Crew. They led a lot of the numbers and overall possessions, passes completed, where they like to hold the ball. And that allowed them to protect themselves defensively because they lost the ball in places they were comfortable with good counter-pressing setups already there. It allowed them to dictate a ton of games, and it allowed them to maximize Hector Herrera. And the question when he came into this league was, obviously a great player, but not a player that you normally would build teams around. They found a way to do it. His deep lying passing, his runs out of midfield to be the third or fourth man in the box, his ability to sort of break a back line with his movement when he makes those runs, it was all at an elite MVP candidate level. And so they're fun to watch. They're a team that got a ton of buy-in from a lot of the pieces. And I think that's what you saw in this offseason. The focus for them was bringing back the success from last year, keeping continuity, re-signing Griffin Dorsey and having him established. They're already set up now with Mikhail for the future. It feels like they re-signed Arthur to a new deal. They were able to hang on to Coco Carrasquilla, which maybe we didn't expect. That seems to have been the focus in the offseason. I think that makes a ton of sense. But in saying that, you're never going to be fully healthy. Ache at his age, it's always going to be a question mark. They're going to try and fill in. It sounds like Jan Gregoos is going to be that guy. And yeah, in the abstract, Jan Gregoos does some similar things to Hector Herrera, but he's not. And so there's always going to be a step back when Ache is not on the field. And the question is if Houston has enough going on around them and enough sort of good vibes for a lot of it to cover. But I think the gamble is Ben Olsen, with his back against the walls, won in this league before, and they built the core of this team out of other guys you can say that about, out of Steve Clark, out of Franco Escobar, out of Griffin Dorsey, out of Arthur. And I think the belief is week in and week out, they'll be able to maintain performances until Ache is healthy.
That's a big question mark, though. Ache changes, I mean, so much about this team, being able to convert possession into dangerous opportunities, being the release valve in those possession moments around the 18. I mean, you saw the way he would come in, he would face back toward his own net, play wall balls, spin around, get in behind, play the final pass, be the finisher. He was sort of the do-it-all guy that none of these other players can be. They're not capable of it. They need somebody to open that up for them. Part of that was the game model, but part of that was just the sheer gravity of Hector Herrera, the leadership of Hector Herrera, his ability in possession to change the point of attack quickly, to understand when it's time to speed up that cadence in the final third and play that ball to an overlapping Dorsey or to get Quiñones in behind. Now, losing Quiñones, that's where your depth starts to get tested. Ibrahim Aliyu's probably a guy you might slot over there. Maybe they can go find somebody in league or out of contract to back him up, but it's going to be Carrasquilla and TBD on those wings. Maybe Bossy goes over to the other side. More likely, he's inside with a new number 8. Could be Kowalczyk, could be Jan Gregoos, but we know it's going to be Sebas Ferreira up top, and he's the most interesting player on this team outside Ache. He's back, baby!
He feels high on your list of most interesting players in the league right now.
I mean, his career basically fell off a cliff last year. He came into preseason for what had been a bad Houston Dynamo team, whose star player wanted to leave, a team in which he'd scored goals, and immediately was sort of like banished quietly as a designated player of like, nah, this dude doesn't fit. He's not doing what we would like him to do. It's so bad that we can't fathom keeping him on our roster when our other options, remember, wasn't all you.
Yeah.
It was like Corey Baird.
And Thor.
A super draft pick. No offense to Thor. But they sent him out on loan in those conditions, and then he did basically nothing in Brazil. So to me, it's super interesting because you have two sides who are both a little bit desperate. The Dynamo are desperate for center forward production. No doubt about that. Corey Baird's gone. Mm-hmm. Ferreira was invested in at a designated player level, both in salary as well as transfer fee, and has delivered before. But the Houston Dynamo, to maintain their level, need him to deliver again. For Ferreira to keep his career going at the age of 25, like in any sort of, forget like, the curve going super high, just any upward trajectory, he's got to be locked in and he's got to be a player who puts in a little bit more effort against the ball, let's say, but might be in a better position within this team, the way they're now constructed and the way they now play, to really thrive.
Yep. It's interesting because I don't think this is a forced marriage at this point. Like, I think everyone had an out this offseason. I think Houston, while they probably would have lost some money, could have gotten off of him. And I think he could have demanded to leave. And it seems from the outside that there was personal conversations one-on-one with Ben Olsen, with Pat Onstad, with the entire group. And everyone made the assessment that they should attempt to hard restart and have him come back and try and be a part of this group. So at least it feels like there's a lot of buy-in from people around it and not, we're stuck. Like, let's just see what happens. Let's throw him on a Houston 2 roster every once in a while to get him a goal or two and then see if we can sort of manage out of it. I think there's a belief, which is 2 years ago, Houston was a lot worse and he scored a bunch of goals. This is a guy who has scored goals with few chances and he really didn't fit the game model at the start of last year. That game model shifted a ton. as the year went along. Bossy came inside. They became that possession team. They started to find Griffin Dorsey. They were able to bring in Sviatchenko, who gave them a different passing option out of the back. Like, the Houston team from March to November of last year was massively different. And the belief is he fits into that second team. If he can come in and be positive, he has scored a goal in every preseason game. We've heard a million times.
Four goals so in three far. Games.
Yeah. That he could be that player. And if he's that player, part of what this does is you used to have to overwhelm other teams with chance creation because you were inefficient as a finishing team. Corey Baird and whoever else was playing up top were all low efficiency finishers. If he shifts that, when you don't have Ace Ace, you actually don't need to create as many chances. So part of what you lose with Ace Ace not on the field, which I think you described really well, you're okay with because you've got a higher quality finisher who only needs 1.5 real chances, where it used to be you needed 4 real chances to potentially get one goal. They're still going to be dangerous on set pieces, I think, even without Ace Ace's service because of the options they have in the back. And so there's still an opportunity for this team, I think, to keep their head above water. They are not going to contend for Supporter Shield this year. They're not deep enough. They're not set up at this point. They're built around an aging, currently injured star. They lose Quiñones. Like, that's not where this group's at, and which you could say was the step you were looking for from last year, but they should still maintain their identity, and therefore they can be successful, I think, long-term. And now, year two, okay, can we go out and find a U22 initiative signing that fits this model? And so we can go get someone that Cincinnati's not looking at or that LAFC's not looking at because we play in a different way than them. And I think that's where Houston can find a ton of success.
Over under 9.5 goals from the center forward position. Do you believe in Sebas?
I'm all in, man. You sold me. You and Anders sold me.
Remember that when the Golden Boot draft comes around. You're a big Sebas guy when the Golden Boot draft comes around.
Yeah, I'll tell Doyle that.
Yeah, the this is fine meme is pretty straightforward. Ace Ace hurt. If he can't get back to his levels or even close to them from last year, you lost Quiñones already. For long term, Ben Olsen had said it doesn't look good. It's a shame this happened in Olympic qualifying down in South America. And then maybe Ferreira's a bust again, where all you can't step up to any sort of replacement level of Quiñones production, which was pretty minimal, to be fair, and you had a bunch of career years. Bossy's not the same player. Artur's not the same player. Coco is sort of reeling because his European dream never happened. And Griffin Dorsey, who looked incredible last year, is more average.
The trend in MLS over the last few years is that, which is everything hits one year. Austin 2 years ago, potentially Orlando this year. We don't know what St. Louis will be, but like, we've seen a lot of teams that have overperformed in these special ways and found something, and it's very hard to maintain it without investing heavily. And sometimes that means completely changing it, right? Like because Columbus, Caleb Porter, year one, they win MLS Cup. Second time they win MLS Cup, Lucas Zelarayán's not even on the team anymore. So it can be very difficult, and it's almost probably at this point more likely than the other scenario.
Where do you have them finishing in the West?
I say playoff team, but in that 5-8 range.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be one where they're still a little bit nervous coming into the weeks before decision day and perhaps even decision day. But for the Dynamo, getting back to the playoffs, maintaining, as you said, that would be a successful season. Philadelphia, and then we're on to the CONCACAF Champions Cup, 55 points. This is a negative trend line, minus 12 points from the 67 they picked up in 2002. Fourth in the East, fifth in the Supporters' Shield, lost to Cincy in the Eastern Conference. Semi, the Haiku, run it back, Union. Same team, same expectations. Different results? We shall see. In Alejandro Bedoya. He's in because he re-signed. Same with Kai Wagner. Sanders Ngobo from Denmark. Marcus Anderson. Julian Carranza not leaving. That's like an in for them, but it might be an out in the summer. TBD. The only real out of significance is Andres Pereira, who they signed and then loaned and now have permanently transferred to New York City. What's Jim Curtin working with this year? I mean, basically the same tools.
Yeah, the same team, a team that's found success and more mid pressing than super high pressing as much anymore. They have probably the best center back pairing in Major League Soccer. You add in Andre Blake to that, the best three man core there. You add Jose Martinez, it gets even better. So they're a team that's built on a really strong spine. They're a team where every player in this roster fits the identity and what they're trying to do. Everyone has a clear and defined role. Most of them have performed at a high level in those roles. There's those few question marks now with Carranza, but when you look at the rest of this project, you know, bringing Kai Wagner back, which we all said wasn't going to happen, and it seemed like a sure thing he was gone, bringing Alejandro Bedoya back, who they said this wasn't going to happen, and he comes back now into this team. They've extended Jose Martinez, Glesnes. They've extended Bueno. They've extended Harial. Yeah, Nathan Harial. And you add on to all of that, bringing back Kai Wagner. Like, they've kept the core together, and it's a core that has flirted with MLS Cup and every other trophy over the last 4 or 5 years.
Who's the star of this team?
The four I said are the reason they're good, but in the star conversation, it's always attacking. It's Carranza. He's the gap. When Carranza's not on the field, there's no one else who gets close to what he does at his position. They can cover for a couple minutes or a couple games if it ends up being Damian Lowe. They've brought in some other center back depth as well this offseason. They can cover if it's Jesus Bueno playing instead of Jose Martinez. They just can't do it without Carranza. He's the only one who can create chances that he creates either for himself or for his teammates at such a high level, who can pressure the other team because of his speed combined with his strength as well as his finishing ability. So he's the one that is an outlier in that when he's at his best, they're at their best. And without him, they don't really have anyone else who does that job.
Feels like he's the variable, to your point, right? The guy that does things that maybe you wouldn't expect. And for Carranza, a lot of time, that isn't like the traditional nine thing of beats two guys off the dribble. Wow, incredible shot. It's more, oh, wow, he sniffed out that pass or that opportunity to press that created this chance for Ua or for Carranza or for Gazdag or for himself to score a goal. It's just like in a way, he understands how this club wants to play better than most, and it gives him those opportunities to be successful. But he could be gone in the summer. He doesn't seem upset about being in Philly, but he doesn't seem like that's where he wants to be forever. And I can't blame him. Scored 14 goals in back-to-back years. He's probably thinking, it's time for me to make another move. If it happens in the summer, that's a big deal for this team. If it happens at the end of the year for free, they better have won a trophy.
This is the last year of his contract. So part of the like stressor is like, if it doesn't happen, he gets to decide his own future at the end of this year, which is a rare thing for a soccer player. I think the lesson out of the Kai Wagner situation was like, it was evident to Wagner, his agent, and the people around that they made every attempt to get him where he wanted to go, to the point where when he got to make his own decision and he saw the landscape was exactly what the union saw, he came back. You don't come back to a club that you don't want to be a part of. You don't come back to a club that you think has wronged you. So I think that's part of the context with Carranza is like, I think there's a level of trust there with him, as well as, you said, comfort. He knows he's playing well. He knows he's competing at a high level. He knows he's at a team that can compete for trophies because they've shown it over the last few years. And I think he's enjoying that, especially after the Inter Miami experience he had of just like losing a year of professional soccer.
23 years old. So he has the age on his side. Let's say at the end of this year, he goes and sniffs around in Europe. It's still the same profile of Bundesliga clubs or, you know, clubs that he doesn't currently want to play for, sniffing around, who probably can't pay him what the union could pay him. There's a possibility.
Do you think it's the union? Like, do you think if he goes to Europe and doesn't find that number and he comes back, Philly pays him or a different MLS team?
Well, that's interesting. And I didn't want to introduce that into that little seed.
Let's just make up a team that has a bunch of money after selling a center forward. FC Cincinnati. I don't know if anyone there has ever worked with
that little seed you just planted in the brains of Union fans. It could grow and could grow rather quickly. Big season for him. Who's the big guy outside of Carranza that you're watching?
Jack McGlynn. And I don't know if big guy is the right term, but it's definitely that's where
you hope he's becoming a big guy, right?
He's so fun. Like the way he plays soccer is the way I want everyone to play soccer. He's gifted in possession. He sees passes. He takes risks and they trust him. Like to be in a midfield with Daniel Gazdag, who's getting called up for Hungary, Alejandro Bedoya, who is a club legend and a national legend in the sport, and Jose Martinez, and they all are willing to give him the ball in high leverage moments and run for him and work for him. It just shows you how talented he is. It's probably his last year in Philly if everything's on the right timetable. And so it's our last opportunity to watch him in this league. And along with Carranza, he could then be a difference maker. Like if he takes a step to a level where he's a Georgi Mihailovic given of like putting up double-double, creating consistently, you can't really defend him. You have to send extra numbers towards him anytime he's near the ball, opens up other guys. That's another way for this team to get better, which is part of the theory of being a team that's sort of academy built.
Mikel Ua is my guy. More minutes, more starts, fewer goals, inconsistent performances. They need Mikel Ua to be a big-time player or at least a consistently dangerous goal threat, which he was not nearly enough last year. Which brings us to our over-under, 66.5 goals scored. You set this one. It was 57 goals scored last year. In 2022, it was a good bit higher at 72. So you're sort of playing the middle ground. I'm going to hit the under on 66.5.
66.5 for context would be the lead last year's best. And yeah, 2 years ago, it would be LAFC's number, which was second to Philly.
I'm hitting the under hard on this one.
Do you think it's under what they did this year?
No, I think it's probably in the same zone.
Okay.
High 50s.
I would go over this year. So I'm in that range. I think they're in between 63 and 66. I think there's room for this team to be better this year than they were last year.
This is fine. Carranza's sold, can't replace his production. Bedoya's too old. His production falls off. The young players don't take a step forward. McGlynn isn't this wonderful unicorn of an American soccer player that you just described. Quinn Sullivan doesn't step up. Andre Blake has a little bit of a rough year by his standards, and they're just back there again in the middle of the pack of the East, and they can't win a trophy. This is fine. This is not a non-playoff team. They are going to the playoffs. The floor is quite high. It's a question of where the ceiling is. So where is the ceiling, Dave? Is this finally the year?
I think a lot of people would find it hard to make the argument that it is, but I have a little bit of confidence because when I look back over the last 3 years at when Philly's bumped up against their limit, while it's overwhelming talent, it's also depth. And it's depth, whether it's Alejandro Bedoya had to play so many minutes and they couldn't fill in for him in 2022 that they didn't have enough bullets in the chamber to be able to get over the top in MLS Cup. It's 2021, which was obviously a huge outlier, but that fell on depth and the reason that they lost. And I think last year at times as well, they showed a little bit more strength in numbers in that they finally lost Glesnes to an injury and that back five that was always together finally started to fall a little. But Damian Lowe stepped in and played some really good minutes for them and kept them at a decent level. Jesus Bueno emerged as a legit player. So there is, to me, more depth, more options. Whether that just means that Carranza and Bedoya and Gazdag are sharper and have more energy in the playoffs, or whether it means the guys coming off the bench in a Ty Baribo, one of the young players that they've signed in midfield instead of Bedoya or with Bedoya here and one of the other fullback options, whether it means those guys are game changers or just give them more minutes across the board. I think we all wanted them to take where they were and make a massive increase and almost guarantee themselves the next step. And we've seen teams do that in the past, right? We saw Seattle Sounders bring in Albert Rusnak and increase everything that they were. We saw Columbus last summer say, we're going to bring Diego Rossi into this and supercharge what we're doing and take it to the next level. We saw Cincinnati do it with Nobido, but I think they are inching incrementally closer and they were already there. So to me, they don't have to go that far. And as much as they're not like the golden child anymore, they are one goal away over the last 4 years, pretty much from being in or winning MLS Cup every season.
Yeah, but the odds went against them on all those. I think that's the complaint if you're Union fans. It's like, hey, we were there. We were staring at the mountaintop, and then we slipped at the most inopportune time, and we're trying to do it with the same equipment. You know, I think they can do it. I just think the odds for any team, there's 29 teams trying to win MLS Cup. There's more than that, you know, trying to win the Open Cup. There's, you know, more than that, obviously, trying to win Leagues Cup and, you know, whatever the bracket is for CONCACAF Champions Cup, you know, it's a little fewer, but it's got the Gigantes in there. I don't see them winning a trophy this year. I see them being very good. I just don't see a trophy. Let's talk about the first trophy up for grabs here, CONCACAF Champions Cup. It starts on Tuesday. Comunicaciones and Monterrey, I believe, kicks us off. And then we have Real Estelí and América, Herediano and Toluca, Forge and Guadalajara, and then Vancouver on Wednesday at 10 p.m. against Tigres. And then we wait about 2 weeks for the rest of the teams to get involved in the Champions Cup first round. Remember, there are some buys for MLS teams. Columbus, virtue of MLS Cup, and Inter Miami, because of Leagues Cup, will have a buy into that second round game. The big question, as always, is can an MLS team win it? And I would broaden that to can they break into the top four, Dave, because the top three, I think, are pretty clear. It's Club America, it's Monterrey, and it's Tigres. That's on history, that's on squads, that's on expectations. All three of those teams would occupy the first three favorite spots if you're looking at the competition. To put MLS's performance and place within that in perspective, let's go all the way back to 97, the first year they were in it. 26 years, different formats. Over the course of that time, 74 MLS teams have participated in whatever it was at the time, Champions Cup, Champions League, that CONCACAF was putting on. 45 quarterfinalists, so that's okay. A little more than half got to the quarterfinals. 16 semifinalists, that's of 104 possible. Just 16 from MLS, and only 6 finalists out of 52 overall, but for the last 6 tournaments, MLS has had a finalist. And of course, just one winner, the Seattle Sounders. 10 bites at the apple this year. Do you have more hope than normal, or are you still operating in a place of prove that you can be a champion because so few have?
Yeah, I think, like I said at the beginning, I'm still kind of on the second side of things. It also, like, I guess outside of Columbus, it just feels like a lot of the teams in this have had hectic off seasons. And so you're asking them to try and start the year already at 55 miles per hour and do it cohesively and do it across multiple competitions. And it just doesn't feel that sure for a lot of these groups. You come into this and you just, like, you skim through and you just say, Achi Achi is already out. So now where's Houston at? St. Louis, we've never seen them from year one to year two. What are we talking about? New England, new coach, a ton of new pieces. You know, Orlando City, potential, what's going on with Duncan McGuire. Inter Miami, just the biggest unknown I think we've ever had in this league. FC Cincinnati, again, 4 starters that are going to be different.
And so Monterrey on the other side.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the other thing. Like, plot it out. Go through the bracket.
And there's not
so hard.
There's a couple spots where Columbus guaranteed to face an MLS team in the next round. So there's an MLS team in a quarterfinal already. So, like, you can have that conversation and have a little bit of confidence with something like that. If you trust Nashville to be better than Austin and beat a Dominican side in the first round, that's another MLS team that's already in a quarterfinal in that bracket because they would face off against Inter Miami in the next round. So, like, there's opportunity there. You know what Maria was talking to us about with Pachuca being a huge struggle and Toluca being one of the big up and down performance teams in Liga MX. Like, that's a pretty good road for Philadelphia, where you also have a situation on that side of the bracket where America and Chivas have to play against each other to face off against you in a semifinal. But
whoa. Don't dismiss Forge like that.
No, I would never.
Sending Chivas to the Great White North.
Bobby Smirnione is a legend. But at the same time, what I just said, Philly's going to go and lose leg one at Saprissa. Like, that is the purple monster. That is, we saw what LAFC, even on the road to a final, what happened against them, against Alajuelense at home. These tests are tough. They still come at a tough part of the year. Even what I think we're starting to see more comfort from MLS teams in, because of Leagues Cup, playing against Liga MX teams, those are not on the road. Like, those are not in Mexico. And so it is, as bad as Pachuca can play, when Philly comes to town, it is still a big moment for that team. It is still a big competition. And for a club that probably won't contend in Liguilla, like, this is a winnable thing, or this is a thing where you can make a run. So I don't have crazy confidence across the board. I'm having quiet confidence about Columbus because last time they won MLS Cup, I said they were the best returning roster in MLS history. And I picked them to beat, I think, Monterrey was who they played in that first round. Maybe it was Tigres. No, I think it was Monterrey. And I think Zelarayan got 2 yellow cards in the first game and ended up getting suspended and everyone got injured and no one was available. That would be the one where they finished the year on a high. They brought everyone back. Half the guys came in the summer. They should only get better. Like, if they are healthy, they should be very similar to what we saw in the MLS Cup run, where they were at times dominant. And to do that in your first knockout game later on, so you get your feet under you, you play a little bit of MLS games, you play a full preseason, and to do it against a more familiar team like Houston and St. Louis is big. But am I going to pick them over Tigres right now? Probably not.
Nah, look, it's a numbers game sometimes in this. 10 actually, because Inter Miami, 10 teams from MLS, just 5 from Liga MX, if my count is correct. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This is riveting
good
television.
Radio. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And here's the percentages for you. Since 97, 27% win percentage maybe. For, huh?
Six. I think you forgot Pachuca, who are already in the round of 16.
Oh, this is going really well for me.
Yep.
Either way. 17-47 is MLS's record against Liga MX in knockout since 97. It has gotten a little bit better. Recently, there were 2-18 MLS teams from 08 to 17. That was sort of the modern start of CCL, that first decade. And it's 12-18 since then. So the trends are getting a little bit better. But yeah, you plot it out, and Columbus has a good route because they wouldn't face any Liga MX competition until the quarterfinals. And as much of that as you can get is generally the best path. Not everybody can be Toronto FC and knock off the best of the best. What's the best round one matchup for you involving an MLS team?
There are some good ones. I mean, Vancouver are fun in this competition because normally they'll take risks. Like, they'll try. And as we mentioned, like, they're going to play at Starlight. So it's one of the coolest atmospheres in North America. It's this tiny little stadium inside the trees on Vancouver Island. It's just going to be quirky and weird, but I think it's going to be fun. There's rumors that Gignac maybe will have surgery and won't be available for that game. And so, can Vancouver hold the fort and then maybe be able to get something against the run of play on the road as well? So I think that one's really fun and stands out to me. And then I think Houston, St. Louis as well. Just like, those are the two big teams where you're like, what does year two look like in this project? And so we're going to learn a lot.
Give me Kai Revs with Alohense on the other side. Because the Revs have a decent path forward too, but Kai's knocked off MLS teams in this competition. Costa Rican teams are close to 50-50 with MLS teams in knockout round in CONCACAF Champions League. And then on the other side, it's probably America or Guadalajara. But the Revs under Caleb, he's got a cup competition off the jump. But all the listings here, as we get closer to some of these games, we'll dig into them a little bit more. What do you think about Club America? Let's go through some of these favorites just to get people ready for it. I know they don't like Liga MX talk on this show, but come on. These are the best teams in the competition. What they've lost, one game in 29 matches, all comps, scored 37 goals in 17 games last tournament. That was 10 more than Monterrey, and they have lost 0 games so far to start this season, 5 matches so far. Julian Quiñones is a freaking incredible player, and he's one of many on this team.
And they've shown their mettle in beating Tigres the way they did in the previous Legia. Like, this is a team that has now shown as a group they can perform in the highest pressure moments, and they can steal sort of they stole a result at Tigres to be able to stay alive for the second leg. So they're, I think, to me, they're clear favorites, even getting Chivas potentially in the second round. Like, I actually think that's kind of a comfortable matchup for them just because there's familiarity. It'll be electric because of the rivalry, and that's going to be awesome for everyone involved. But like, I like their road. To me, they're the obvious favorites because I think their pathway is easier than Tigres, and they're younger.
Tigres or Monterrey? Second most favored for you in this competition?
I think Tigres, because I think Monterrey has a tougher road, having Cincinnati in the next round, potentially Inter Miami in months at this point. So maybe we don't know what Messi's health looks like, but the potential for him to be healthy at that point is higher. And so I think Monterrey's road is tougher than Tigres, and Tigres has that familiarity having already played Orlando City last year. So I think it sort of fits pretty well for them to go through this.
Monterrey is stupid. I've been watching all the matches because of Brandon Vasquez, obviously, and 3 goals. You know that if you listen to this show. But the talent level on any given moment, I mean, they're bringing Jordi Cortizo off the bench for Canales, and that's off the bench, and that's one player. Bertarame is back. Hector Moreno is in there. Govea, Tecatito, and Tecatito's been coming off the bench a ton. This team is just absolutely loaded at every single position.
Are you not Chivas first, though, with your Chicharito shrine?
No.
Is the try not go goats? Is it just the Galaxy trap?
Yeah, that's shrine? Fair. I didn't really think about the transfer of the shrine. Yeah. No, Chivas, for me, not going to be a team that the challenges for this, but they've done it before, and obviously they beat Toronto FC, but Tigres is right there. Juan Bruneta, the reload on that one, that's pure Tigres. Say, hey, who's the best player in the league last year? Oh, Juan Bruneta? Yeah, we'll just go sign that guy. Sebastian Cordova, Nicolas Ibanez, Gignac, even if he's not there, may not matter when you got Nahu and Guido Pizarro and Aquino and so many others on this team. And this is where it gets, you know, this is where it gets a little bit tough when you're an MLS fan or an MLS commentator and you're like, yeah, there's three teams in here that are head and shoulders above. How does MLS do it? But we had the same questions in Leagues Cup, and lo and behold, they did it.
I think there's way more confidence for a lot of these teams in these matchups. Like, belief that MLS teams can do the things that make them successful every week against this competition. But the room for error is very low. It still stands that it's early in the season for large parts of this. Is everyone hitting form? Some people are coming off international stuff. Some people are coming off Olympic qualifying. Some people are getting ready for Copa America. Some people are getting ready for the Olympics. Like, it all sits in a weird spot, and you need a special blend. I think that's what we saw with Seattle. Like, you need some special moments and a special blend at the right time, and you need to focus on it. I don't know that every club will have that. I don't know that every team will come in and say, we're willing to put everything on the line here and risk, you know, maybe playing more minutes than you'd expect early on in April to try and win this thing. Because I think a lot of the teams that are in this are kind of a year early, earlier than they expected. When you talk about a Houston and a St. Louis and maybe even a Cincinnati, and okay, we've got Leagues Cup, we've still got MLS Cup, we've still got potentially Supporters Shield. And so it seems like it sits in a weird place. But at the same time, we could see Philly in a semifinal. And you just talked about it. They need to win a cup. And they need to prove it. And Inter Miami has traveled the world to show that they're a global entity. This is your global competition. Like, this is it. This is how you get into a Club World Cup. This is how you show that you are a team to be reckoned with in the region on top of what you did in Leagues Cup. So there's huge opportunity here. It's always fun. Right now, you're like, what's going to happen? And then within 30 minutes of the first game, Monterrey is going to be down 2-0 and then win 4-2.
I think it's all for free on Tubi, which is a streaming app you can go download. Of course, Fox Sports has the rights as well, and I believe they'll be streaming on their channel through Tubi if you do not get Fox Sports through whatever it is that you acquire your television entertainment these days. Quickly in the mailbag, Holding the High Line hit us up, said, I had a good time with the ski banter to open the Thursday show. Weeby was a little heavy on the slang, but used every word correctly. Better than most Jerry's, he says. A Jerry is like a noob, I'm assuming. Dave, do you know that?
I normally use the term kooks. Kooks are people who don't know how to surf, I think, which they also then use. I'm a kook. I'm the one.
Okay.
And it says on the bumper sticker, go away. It's me. But yeah.
He invites you to Colorado. He says,
I was in Colorado.
The powder is better. That's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah. The snow is better than it was in California. But I will say you're welcome, because it snowed my second day there and blizzarded for like 4 or 5 straight days. So my gift to the state of Colorado.
And he's back, folks. Madzo will be back with us on the next show as we break down these first results in Champions Cup and continue on the preview bandwagon here. Any questions, comments, concerns, whatever you got, United us up. Enjoy your week, everybody. For David Goss, Anders, Maria, I'm Andrew Wiebe. Adios. We'll be right back.